This is Dr. Emily Letran, and you're listening to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Jesse Green.
Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Our guest today is a business mentor, speaker, philanthropist, author, and the CEO and owner of two multi-specialty dental practices in California. She graduated from the UCLA School of Dentistry in 1993 and now helps business owners and entrepreneurs win back their time from work through exceptional leverage. In her book, From Refugee to Renaissance Woman, she shares her experience of becoming a citizen of the United States after being a refugee in 1981. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show, Dr. Emily Letran. Emily, how are you? That's quite an introduction.
Well, thank you so much, Jesse. I'm doing very well, and it's an honor to be on your podcast.
Look, I've been really looking forward to this show, Emily, because your story is really one that resonates with lots of people of overcoming some challenges in life and really leading an extraordinarily great life, you know, as you've written in your book, Committing to a Big Life. As we start our conversation today, I really just wanted to ask you about your beginning and your journey to the United States. Can you tell us a little bit about that story and how you came to get to the United States and what that journey was like for you?
Yes, well, thank you. Well, you know, I was actually born in Vietnam back in the late 60s. So that was during the Vietnam War. And so when I was growing up, every night, what I watched on TV were just images of war. You know, there were bombings, there were people fleeing villages, a lot of propagandas, you know, repeating on every night. I was pretty sheltered because I grew up in the city. Both of my parents were philosophy teachers. And so, you know, I'm just watching the war from a distance because we're watching it on TV. But at the same time, everything was changing around us. And in 1975 is when the communists took over Vietnam. The Americans left. There were basically long days of shortage. There was shortage of food. There was shortage of material. People were standing in line to buy whatever the government would be willing to sell to them. And as a teenager, I used to stand in one of those lines for the family. 1 year after the communists took over, my mother passed away due to cancer. I was 8 years old. And then a couple of years after that, Vietnam was going to go to war again, this time with China in the north and Cambodia in the west. This is back in those years where you remember the movie The Killing Field? Yeah, when the Pol Pot were massacring their people. So they were drafting all the young men. As soon as you hit 18, you're going to war. And I was a girl. I wasn't going to be drafted, but my dad told me. Well, actually, my aunt at this time decided to leave the country because she has two kids. And then my older brother is a guy, and then we have several cousins who are all guys. So she was going to leave the country, and she was taking her kids and my older brother and a couple of cousins. And so my dad told me that I need to leave with her because I'm the, quote, oldest girl in the family. So I can help her take care of the group. So I left the country in 1981. I was 13 years old. I left my dad and two younger siblings back home. And I never saw him again because after that he passed away due to cancer. So we were one of those boat people. We were on the fishing boat. We were on the ocean for 7 days. And the first 2 days we had some food. The next 5 days just sips of water. And we got to the refugee camp. This particular one was in Malaysia. It was on a deserted island, so the refugees just made, you know, makeshift homes, and we received food supply. Every 3 days, you get a bag of food supply. You would stand in line every day to get some fresh water because it's on an island. And I lived there for several months. I finally came to the United States as a refugee. So, starting basically with nothing. I tell people my luggage coming to the United States were just hope and faith. because we really did not have anything. And I used to sleep on the floor because we would have 10 of us with the extended family and other people sharing the apartment, 10 people in a two-bedroom apartment. I would stay up late every night to translate English to Vietnamese because it was my first language. And so, you know, all the subjects in high school, I basically had to translate from one language to the other. But I was very blessed. I went through high school, you know, as a family, we got government help. And then I went to an undergraduate college. I finished that in 3 years. And then I went to UCLA Dental School and I finished my dental degree and a master in oral biology all in the same 4 years. And so because of the background coming to the country, not having anything, and then receiving a lot of help from the government, from people that, you know, who are better than us, but we don't necessarily know them. I always carry that in me that, you know, as soon as I'm able to, I'm going to give back. And that kind of why I want to share my expertise, my knowledge with other business owners to help them grow the business. That's why I have a foundation. So every month we do a free dentistry day where we provide basic dentistry to families of disadvantaged background and to veterans.
Yeah, I think that's a really, there's so many threads in that story, Emily, that I'd love to pick up because there's so much good that's come out of that story, of course. One of the things I'd like to just ask you about is the boat journey from Vietnam ultimately to Malaysia. And you said you're at sea for 7 days and there was, you know, food for two and not for five. What do you remember of the boat journey? Is it the smell of diesel or is it the smell of the salt water? Because one of the things I find is the senses often associated with memories. And I'm just curious to ask, what's your lingering memory of that particular time?
You know, I was very fortunate that I was young enough to not worry. I think as an adult, you'll be worrying, where are you going to end up? Are you going to die? You know, all those thoughts that I learned about them once I got into the refugee camp, because that's the story. Those are all the stories around me, right? Of people who may have almost died or they lost loved ones. But for me on the boat, I think it was more the color, because you're sitting on the boat and all around you is blue ocean, right? And I remember staring at the water, wanting to drink it. You know, because we don't have water, and I'm looking at all this water around me, and it just, and I think I did take a sip, which, of course, against my aunt's advice, you know, don't drink that water.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you don't have any. You're just looking at this beautiful blue water that you can't drink. And I remember that the most. And then at night, it's pitch black all around you. I think when we first left, there was a moon, because it was whatever time of the month. So there was a full moon when we left. But other than that, you know, everything around you, you think about it, at night, the water is black and the sky is black. So if you look up, you can see some stars. Maybe you see the moon, depending on there was, you know, cloudy or not. But it just, during the day, it's all blue. And during at night, it's all black. And it's still a trigger for me. You know, anytime I go to the ocean and if I'm looking at that direction, so if I'm in California, if I'm looking west, I would remember when we first got to the refugee camp and we'll be walking on the beach, at the deserted beach, basically, and looking at the other side and just thinking, over there is home. So for me, it was really more the color.
Yes. Okay. Wow. So moving on from that particular journey, obviously found your way to the United States. And as a young person, as you said, you probably didn't have the worries or hadn't let those fears or worries creep in because that was more of an adult experience. But when you got to the United States and you were on your journey, what was the overwhelming feeling for you? Was it, you know, one of gratitude or nervous excitement, anticipation about the future? Or was it just rolling up your sleeves and getting to work and making your life?
Well, you know, I wasn't worrying about a life in that situation, but I was worrying about a lot more, a lot of other things, like how am I going to talk, right? People don't understand me. How how soon can I learn this? I remember one of the frustration I used to have is we try to watch TV because they say the best way to learn a language is to watch TV, you know, watch the news. And back then there's no caption or anything. So you're really concentrating when you're watching TV, trying to understand, even if you understand every other word. And I remember feeling really frustrated anytime there's a sitcom on TV, because I couldn't understand the sitcom, but people just keep laughing.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there for 30 minutes and you just hear laughing, and you want to know why are people laughing. And I remember, you know, those are the not so much worries, but you kind of frustrated, right? The frustration that when am I going to get to that level when I can actually do these things like other people? And the gratitude has always been there, because if you imagine when you come from a country where you used to stand in line to get food, right? And then you go to the refugee camp and you stand in line to get food again. And then when you go to the United States and you all of a sudden you have a little apartment, and I didn't care that I was sleeping on the floor. This is something I reflected on when I was writing my first book, From Refugee to Renaissance Woman, when I just wanted to share my story. But for me, sleeping on the floor was perfectly fine, because that was the same thing we were doing in the camp, right? It's kind of like, okay, I've done this before, I can do this. And I did not realize that my friends, late many, many years later, when they read the book, they didn't know I was sleeping on the floor, right? Because when you show up to school, you're just like anybody else. You got your clothes, you got your books, you got your backpack. But at home, you have all of those disadvantages, and for me, it was normal. And anytime we have one more thing, we get to go to one more trip, that's all gratitude. Always feeling grateful and not taking things for granted.
I think that's incredible, actually, Emily, because as you reflect on your journey, and obviously now that we know where you've ended up, there's been a lot of wonderful things transpire throughout your life, and obviously lots of hard work around that as well. One of my observations from Australia, at least, is many of our post-war migrants have become hugely successful, you know, and they've taken that opportunity and really been able to make something great with it. What is it that you think around the obvious of, you know, having that fresh start that really sees a disproportionate amount of migrants work hard and achieve terrific results? What do you think are the key ingredients in that, apart from the obvious of we've got this opportunity and we've got to make the most of it?
I think one of the things that most migrants have, or in my case, refugee have, is commitment. Because we know it's going to be hard. You know, it's like you start out and you know it's going to be hard. You start out and you know you're already behind. And so when a lot of us go in, we go in with a higher sense of commitment, because we know it's going to take more of us to be able to do what other people do. And I think for a lot of the people who are successful, I think we are all very lucky to be able to seize the opportunity, right? So the opportunity is there. We're there in the right place at the right time. Be open to learning and seizing that opportunity, and really surrounding us with the right people. And by that I mean, because I'm sure you know of people who are migrants and they're not quite as successful, and sometimes they're resentful, sometimes they asking themselves, why did they come? You know those stories too. Those do exist. But the way I always work is I look around and I would say, okay, that person is my same size, my same height, you know, they know the language more than me, but that's like the main difference. If they can do it, I can do it. But to have that kind of mentality, not so much like I can always do it, but just kind of look at people. It's similar to now if I'm coaching somebody and they said, well, you know, this is where my practice is at and I have this challenge at home. Then if I can bring in a fresh perspective, maybe at some point I was in the same boat, or maybe another client of mine is similar, but because they apply this strategy, now they get to, you know, the next level. So for people to have that perspective, I think it's very important. Instead of thinking, okay, this is all of these things happening to me, I got dealt this bad card, and you know, I can't make it out. It's too hard. Yeah.
Yeah. Look, again, one of the things, Emily, because this podcast is going to be listened to by dentists, most dentists are generally on the high achiever end of the spectrum. But there is seemingly a difference between being a high achiever versus being a high performer, because lots of people achieve good things, but they might not be fulfilling their potential, or they might not be entirely happy with their life or whatever it is. What do you see as the difference between high achievement versus high performance? Is there, do you have a thought around that, or is there a perspective that you have around that?
Well, you know, my thought about that is, a high performer is somebody who have heightened and sustained level of clarity, energy, productivity, courage, influence, and necessity. So there are specific criteria that we look at and we say, okay, that's a high performer. So for example, I'm sure you know of dentists who work hard, make a lot of money, and they're always tired, right? You talk to them and they say, I'm burned out. I mean, here's this multi-million dollar practice and I'm burned out and I hate people.
Yeah, and they're asking, is this all there is? You know, there's got to be more to it, right?
Right. And so that is certainly a high achiever, but not a high performer. So the high performing part, I think, is the person always wanting to go to, you know, what's next? What's the next level? This is the person who doesn't just think about today or just in the future. They're thinking legacy, right? They want to know, what am I going to leave in this world when I'm gone? That kind of thinking is usually a high performer, because you're always demanding of yourself more. And then usually in turn, you turn around, you demand more of people around you, the people that you love, the people that you have an influence on. Right. So I think there are a lot of people who are, quote, successful. So I think they are achievers. But a lot of them are not happy. And I think a high performer may not be the one that have the multi-million dollar practice. Right. But it could be a doctor who has a practice that's running well. We just call it him, but it could be he or she. He has time to spend with his family. He's there for his kids. He contributes to the community. He takes vacation so he can refresh himself. I would say that's a high performer. Whether or not he has a multi-million dollar practice or not, it's not really part of the criteria for a high performer. But I think the high performer will tend to have a successful practice also.
Yeah. So why is it then, do you think, that people get stuck in that success trap, if for want of a better word? Why is it that people get stuck there and go, And how do they get to that point of achievement without the performance? Where do things go awry in that journey, do you think?
Well, I think a lot of people say that they get stuck. I think a lot of time, the very first thing I would talk to them about is clarity. What is it that you want? Because, for example, let's say you want $1 million practice and you're at 500 and you say, okay, I'm already trying my best, right? The question is, first of all, why do you want $1 million practice? Because if there's no real good reason why you want that, then maybe you're not stuck.
Yeah.
You know, maybe,
yeah.
Maybe you're already at the top of your game, right? But some people want more money just because they say, oh, it sounds good, because it looks good, just because I want more money. But a lot of time, money is not really what we want. It's maybe status. Maybe it's freedom, right? Maybe it's peace of mind. Those are the things that you actually want, and it might have nothing to do with making more money in your practice. So that's the clarity part. Then once they figure out really what is it that I want, then are you willing to take certain steps or strategies to get to what you want? So I'll give you a very simple example. Somebody say, I'm stuck. I can't, you know, this is all I can make, and then I don't have time for my family, right? They keep saying they're stuck. And I would come in and say, How about if you take a day off, make it a planning day where you can plan out your week, you can plan out your time. Maybe half of the day you can spend with your family. Maybe bring in an associate. Not because you're so busy. You bring in the associate to give you back a little bit of freedom so you can plan on doing marketing or whatever for your practice, or you can be with your family. And the person say, well, but I don't want to do that. So now, who's stuck? Because I gave you or I advise you certain strategies, a different way to do things, but you don't want to do it. So it's not so much that they're stuck. It to me, it's almost like they're not looking for a different way, you know, a different approach.
And is it your experience, Emily? Because certainly we work in the same field, but my experience is sometimes people just don't even know what they want and why they want it. You know, they get to that point and go, you know, I just don't know what I want or what I like anymore. Do you ever come across that as well?
Yes, and that's why the very first discussion I have with my clients is, you know, what is it that is important to you, right? Because sometimes, like I said, they say, well, I want a big house, but why is a big house important to you? And then with the big house come the big payments or whatever it is that comes with a big house. But sometimes that's not exactly what you want or what you need. One of the examples I usually tell people is, let's say you're talking to a kid, right? And sometimes you think the kid wants more gift, more toys. But what the kid really wants is to spend more time with you. But you think you can substitute that with all the stuff that you think the kid wants. So what you need to do is you need to actually ask the kid, what do you want, right? So, but why is it that you take the time and asking, you know, the kids what they want, your spouse what she wants, your patients what they want, you know, do you want a better smile or do you just want to save money or whatever it is. But then you don't take the time to ask yourself, to work with yourself, to find out more about yourself. Sometimes you just, in your particular life, your personal life, you just go through the motion. This is how I start my day. This is how I'm going to work. And, you know, you just go through the motion, but you take time to take care of other people. And that's where someone like me come in, where I would take the time to help you talk to yourself, you know, and understand yourself and working on yourself.
Yeah, and I think that's so critical, Emily, because, again, my experience, and I'm sure yours would be similar, is that the business growth never outpaces the growth of the leader or the owner, right? So if we're not working on ourselves, we can't really expect our business to grow.
Exactly. And I think sometimes what we so fast is we just buy into get one more thing to grow the business, right? Go to one more course, right? To learn whatever, let's say sleep dentistry, whatever it is. Like let's learn the new thing. And then, but then at the same time we come back and we're still not happy. you know, and but then they say they're so busy. I don't have time. I'm working with a client right now, and I said she went through some challenges because her office actually was in that area in Texas that was flooded. So she went through some challenges, and then so I said, okay, well, let's just take a break. And then I reached back out and I said, hey, let's get back on our coaching call. And she would give me the time like in a month. And I know that we have more work to work on here, because you got to put that time in for yourself, right? To get back on track. Because, yeah, I understand. She told me, well, I'm dealing with 5 adjusters, 3 claim officer and 5 adjuster. I understand. But you got to take care of you so that way you stay clear, you stay focused, and you not get sidetracked or distracted by all of the other things that are happening around you, because emergencies will always happen. Disaster, it's not like big disaster, but little disaster can always happen. When somebody is very clear in what they want, it's very easy to decide where you should put your attention, because sometimes you may not have to be the one talking to the adjuster. I don't know if that's like it has to be you, or if they just want to know what are the damages, can somebody else give it to them? You know, it's a matter of like, if you write everything down, then it's okay, go, you talk to the insurance company to give data, that kind of thing. It may not have to be you. And so I think that's why a lot of time when I talk to a doctor and they say they're very busy, it turns out that they're doing a lot of things that they could delegate, that they could leverage their staff or other experts. And then they just feel like there's so much things to do and I don't have time for myself.
Yeah. So speaking of leverage, Emily, because one of the things that we all come across is the I don't have enough time scenario. And I hear that a lot. Now, you've got an ebook about leverage, haven't you? I think you wrote an ebook around that. Can you tell us a little bit about what's in that ebook, just about leverage? Because I think a lot of people listening to the podcast will say, look, I understand the need for leverage, I get it, but I'm just not quite sure how to actually go about doing it. So what is it that you speak about in that ebook?
Well, I'll give you an example. I talk about investment in the book. And so everybody, when they hear investment, they're thinking, okay, stock markets and 401k and probably now bitcoins, right?
yeah, that's all the rage at the moment.
Yeah. Actually, I'm talking about your space and the human capital investment. So I talk about buying your own building, right? So you don't have to deal with a landlord. So you don't have to deal with the rent. And then the rent going up every year, whatever it is, right? So invest in that. Once you have that, the building, you can leverage. Like in the United States, you would create another corporation that owned that building, right? And then your dental corporation rents the space. So then your corporation pay rent to the, you know, to the real estate corporation, and that corporation pay the mortgage. So right there, I'm leveraging, it's the same dollar amount, but I'm building equity and I'm deducting it as a rent expense. So that's just like, that's a simple leverage. I understand that it may take a lot to buy a building, but the intention got to be there, right? It's just like, do I rent my apartment or do I buy a house? And it's funny how people think about that really hard, but when they go to business, they're happily paying rent, you know? And to me, it's the same thing. I talk about leveraging with your staff. You know, in the dental office, we have our staff cross-training them, right? Make it very clear, this is the expectations. I'm going to be inspecting what you do. These are the goals. These are the metrics that I'm going to keep on you. So that way, the next time you come and ask for a raise or whatever other thing, I'm always going to go back to that. So when you do that, you leverage a lot of time, because when people come to you, they're not going to go and have a conversation with you. They can't have a conversation unless they have all their numbers.
That's exactly right.
Right? Yeah. And then leveraging things like sending them to a course, right? Attending continuing education. You don't have to teach your staff all the time. Have them learn from an expert. You take them there, it's like a break from work. So that's one leverage. You're taking a break, you know, you're clearing your mind, and then you're writing that off as a tax deduction. And then your staff are getting training. The staff are getting feedback, because a lot of time when you take your staff to some of those places, depending on which course, of course, but, you know, a lot of times the staff come back feeling more appreciative of you, because they know there's an investment that you pay for that, and then you invest the time, because you have to close the office, right? If it's a big, important course. I mean, I take my whole staff to Vegas once a year. Like, we close and we just all go to Vegas. We're going to have fun there. We're all going to sit down in the same room and learn the same thing together. And we make decisions together on those trips. So leveraging, but see, I don't have to think about the vacation or the trip. Somebody else is already having an event. Let me just leverage. They already have that. They already think about where to have it, where, you know, you can get the entertainment. I'm just going to take advantage of that. When you're working with experts, right, I know there are dentists that they like to know everything and they like to do everything, but most of us are not good with a website. Most of us are not good doing technical stuff. I'm talking most of us. That would be me.
Me too.
So, You know, so why are you trying to learn whatever system it is, and then you get frustrated and you don't do it very well anyway. I tell people I know how to turn things on and off. That's pretty good, you know. And anything in between, I'm not really supposed to know. If I know, that's good, but it's really not I have to know, right? I have to know what's going on with the patient. I have to know the treatment plan. I have to know the procedure. I don't need to know where to go and find whatever instrument. If I know it, it's good, but I don't have to know. There's certain things that sometimes we load our brain with, you know, I need to know this, I need to remember this, and actually you don't. So leverage the technology, leverage the experts around. You might have to pay for an expert to help you with things, but you win back all that time, you win back all that frustration. And the frustration take away the energy from you, and then the energy is part of being a high performer. So I think everything is related when you think about leveraging in the way I think Edison said that you know, that he doesn't have to be smart, that he just needs to hire people who are smart, who can do the things for him. You don't have to go to that extreme, you know, you should be very knowledgeable yourself, but you need to tell yourself that I don't need to do everything. I should not do everything. And when you do that, when you have that mentality, you're always looking for a way to not have to do things, right? And that's where the leverage come in, is you see how other people can support you.
I think that's part of building a great business as well, is having the team around you and building the team up and letting the work flow down to the team. So your ebook that you just spoke about, which is I think going to be a wonderful resource, I think we can get a copy of that on your website, is that correct?
Yes. It's on the website, or the direct link to that is exceptionalleverage.com/ebook. And I share my business strategies in that ebook.
Yeah, look, I think that's going to be a fantastic resource for anyone listening. I'd encourage you to grab a hold of that ebook. I've read through it and there's some really wonderful resources and thinking and there's been some deep thought going to that, so I think it's a great resource. Emily, I do want to come back to something that we spoke about earlier about, you know, many dentists feeling like they just don't quite have enough time or they're not on top of it. And for the rest of the community, they look as though they've got everything together, but internally they're kind of thinking, my goodness, I feel like I'm just chasing my tail. I'm going from one thing to the next. And yeah, they're getting stuff done, but as you indicated earlier, they're feeling a bit tired and a bit worn out. My thinking around that is coming back to your leverage point as well, is that there's too much of the non-critical things that people are doing. So I guess the question then follows, how do you identify the critical things that you should be doing, and where do you put your focus and energy rather than being distracted by the things that we should not be putting our focus and energy on?
Okay, so I have this exercise that I usually share with in my event, because I do a couple of events a year, live event, and I would ask people who have a to-do list, right? And people would raise up their hand, and I ask them who have a to-be list. What do you want to be? Do you want to be adventurous? Do you want to be ambitious? Do you want to be generous? I mean, it has nothing to do with the task. It has to do with who you want to be, right? And then the one that usually throw people off, and I learned this from Joe Polish, is do you have a not to do list? Yeah, so maybe stuff that you shouldn't do, like checking office email, you know, you know that. And this is what to come back and answer your question is, several years ago, I did this exercise where I sit down and I write down everything I do when I come to the dental office, and then I check off which one that I am the only one that need to do that, right? And there was none of them. If you think, because, you know, of course I have a group practice, so do I actually have to do the dentistry? No. Do I actually have to do the difficult root canal? No. Because I have specialists for that. So, but let's say even if you're a solo dentist, right? Whatever you check off should only be the dentistry part, right? The main thing. And then the other thing is, of the thing that you check off, that you say, okay, these are the things that I absolutely have to do, make sure that those are income producing activity. Because sometimes we think that that's most important and they're not. I mean, for example, I know some doctors check all the accounting, right? They want to make sure that certain numbers are right, whatever. If you wanna make sure, just have two different people do it and then you cross check. But you don't have to be the one sitting there and checking it. On your dentistry, this is my personal thing, right? There's some appointments that are more productive than others. So block your time accordingly. If a patient start talking a lot, I will find a way to excuse myself and send my staff in there, and then I'll go do something else. You know, I make sure I get, okay, this is your chief complaint. This is my diagnosis. This is my recommendation. But if they, you know, have there's some patient, they just love to talk and they go on and on and on. Then I just excuse myself and I send my staff in. And sometimes I would have a new staff who come in and they would be thinking, okay, that doctor doesn't talk to the patient, right? And I do. I talk when it matters, right? If it's a long-time patient who come in sharing something wonderful with me, yes, I'll hang in there. I'll talk to them. I probably ask them again for a referral. I probably ask them, you're staying here for so long, you must love us, give us a video testimonial. I mean, tie in something there to grow the business.
I think that's really critical, because it's about knowing, if you're going to spend your time on those activities, it's about knowing what's going to move the dial the most in terms of your outcome, right? Going back to what it is that you want and spending your time on those activities is going to move you towards that, correct?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And what I think about when I talk about productivity, I don't talk about being busy, about being able to do a lot of things. I really talk around being intentional. So you got to set that intention. If we go to a meeting, what is the outcome of the meeting? If you go to a big event, like let's say you go to Dentaltown meeting, what is it that you're looking for, right? I may say I want to go and I want to connect with three other companies who's serve dentists, so maybe we can cross refer, you know, like something like that. Whereas somebody else may just say, I just want to go and learn some stuff. I mean, learning some stuff when you go to Dentaltown is given. That's part of the equation already. You don't have to set the intention, I want to go and I'm going to learn. You go to learn, but what are the intentions to make this particular event profitable or beneficial to the business? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and of course, when people go to achieve a certain outcome, you know, say they're going to the Dentaltown event, or even if they're wanting to do something in their practice, my thinking around that as well is, Emily, that people often get stuck with, I can't see the whole pathway ahead of me, so therefore I won't start. But really, you only need to see the first couple of steps, right? You don't need to see the whole staircase to be able to take the first step.
Yes, yes. And I think what would be most helpful when that's the thinking is to have a coach or a mentor who know there's a staircase and assure you there are more steps after that and they'll work with you. And the other thing is to hang around with the right people. Like I mentioned earlier, if I know my practice is here and your practice is two steps ahead, and you know, we're friends and we're similar. We both have a family and we've been having to practice for a while. I know that I can get to those two extra steps just like you. If I become intentional like you, maybe I just model after you. Look for those kind of people to hang out with, not the one that every time they come together with you, both of you just complaining or whining or just talk about the good old days. You know, I mean, it's great to talk about the good old days, but cap it in 20 minutes.
Yep, and then get on with it.
And then get on with it,
right? Yeah. Emily, you've been so kind and generous to share so many wonderful insights, not just in your own story, which is incredibly fascinating, but some very practical and useful tips for, you know, people who want to really perform at a higher level as opposed to just achieving more and more. And as we said earlier, there's a big difference between achievement and high performance. So what I really love is you've been able to distill high performance down to some really practical and actionable steps. So we really thank you for that. as we wrap up our program today, Emily, if there's something that you wanted to leave the audience with in terms of a couple of key thoughts or Emily's wisdom on a billboard, what would be your thinking around helping dentists get to that next level? What would be one or two key things you'd to say, this is where to put your intention and where to put your focus?
Thank you for the interview. It's been very, very great and refreshing, because we're seeing a lot of things similarly. I would say my advice, the very first one, is to invest in yourself as a person. And by that, I don't just mean invest money to, like, maybe learn something new, get a coach, get a mentor. I'm talking about investing time in yourself, right? Investing in the time for you to take a break, for you to take a vacation, for you to be home, for you to just sit around and watch TV for an hour. Whatever it is that you need to give back to yourself, physically, energetically, emotionally, do that for yourself. Because I think a lot of us, we are so driven all day long, and we always have something to do, have somewhere to go, have something to that we need to achieve, and we forget to take care of ourselves. And that's where when the practitioner is a little bit older, then they regret they didn't do this, they didn't do that, right? And now it's even busier, that kind of thing, because the focus and the intention never change, right? And that's the first thing, is to invest in yourself. And the second thing, which is one of my passion, is to have that intention to create social impact, meaning life is not just about your family, your practice. There's a community beyond that. There's a whole world beyond that. I think the people who are happier in life, they have that kind of mindset. It's not just about them, you know? It's about making a difference. So if you look at it that way, and you can see there are other people who don't have the same thing as you, and you'll be able to help them, then you just realize the power of how you can touch people, how you can impact people, and then you have more gratitude with what you have. And you will always be, you know, trying to do more. But it's not just for yourself, it's for the community. It's for people around you. Just to have a big life. It's not just about you. And I think when you have that kind of mentality, you'll be happier.
Yeah, I think that's really sage advice. And of course, Emily, so what I really love about your story is it is a story of someone who is committing to a big life, and I know that's something you speak about a lot. For anyone on the show who wants to find out more about Emily's work, which I highly commend to you, I'd really encourage you to head across to her website, DrEmilyLatran.com, and check out her work. It's very compelling, and it's very, very fascinating story, and loaded with insight and wisdom for anyone in business, but particularly dentists. Emily, you've been a wonderful guest, very inspiring story. I love your story and the inspiration it gives to others, that no matter what people might be going through, there's always good things ahead if you set the intention for it. And I really, really resonate with that. So on behalf of all the listeners here at the Savvy Dentist Podcast, I wanted to take a moment to say thank you for taking time out of your day to come and hang out with us. We're tremendously grateful to you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's an honor to be on your podcast, and thank you for doing such important work to share, you know, knowledge and expertise and perspectives with our dental community, because I think, and of course, you're coming all the way from down under. because I think, you know, what happened is when we're listening to these podcasts, and we realize that we all have the same issue in a way. It's all how you see it, how you approach it. And if your way didn't work, you know, why not try somebody else's way? Because there's always a way to do things better. And if we're always looking for the next level, that next level is there. I don't think you will ever get to the top of your game if you stay consistent and be a high performer.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Emily, as I said, your work is wonderful. Your work is compelling. Your work is inspirational, and all of us here salute you. So congratulations on your work, and please keep going, because it means a lot to so many of us, and we look forward to talking to you around the traps.
Okay, thank you so much, Jesse.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.